Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Imagine if you could become fluent in any language, even think in a new language, faster than ever before. Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Cruz, and welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show. I'm delighted to have you. We try to make you just a little bit better every single day. Well, actually, you've got to make yourself better. We're just here to help. I hope you'll tell all of your friends. This is the smartest way to start your day. The best way to spend your commute is to play the LeadX Leadership Podcast. Go grab their phone. Show them it's a purple little icon on the iPhone. They just got to tap it, search LeadX, and boom, they can subscribe and join the fun. And of course, after that, send them to leadx.org, our homepage, because we're offering a new free online course every single day. Leadership experts have taught courses on authentic leadership, on delegation. I've taught courses on employee engagement, and even how I maximize my energy and focus. That's the leadx.org homepage. Now, today on the show, we're going to be talking with literally a genius of foreign languages. We're going to discuss his secrets to creating a massively successful Kickstarter campaign, how learning a new language delays Alzheimer's, and why memorization is bad for learning a new foreign language. It's the way I always tried to do it. But first, today's tip is CC carefully. I'm talking about that carbon copy line, the CC line on your email. People use that line too often and put too many people on that line. I was once doing a talk in Vegas on productivity. The vice president slammed his fist down on the table. No, I don't want to be in the loop. 50 people in the room, all in his department, got quiet and suddenly stared down at their pads and paper. So I was teaching my extreme productivity workshop, and we were talking about taming the email beast. And using the CC line, putting too many people on the email message, is a common problem. And it was a problem at this client organization too. Now, there's a variety of reasons why people do this. Sometimes, you know, we do it to cover our butt. Or other times we're afraid we're going to offend someone if they've been left off. You know, we don't want to slight anybody. And as one participant said that morning to the boss, well, it's always a good idea to keep you in the loop. And that's when he screamed, no, I don't want to be in the loop. We all have too much to do, not enough time, and email is a major distractor. When in doubt, leave people off email messages. You're doing them a favor. Don't err on the side of including everybody. If you do feel the need to email a large group or your entire department, then be extremely clear about the desired action. For example, you might write, Aaron and Ken, please reply all with your yay or nay on this decision. Or you might say, response only required from Kelly by COB Tuesday. This is just FYI for everyone else. That's going to prevent people from hitting reply all with their 2 cents or questions or whatever else. And we've all been on those nightmare chains that never end. My personal peeve is when then someone hits reply all and says, take me off this list. This has been a friendly public service announcement to CC very carefully. Now, our guest today invented a whole new way of learning foreign languages. He reached fluency in French in 5 months. Russian took him 10 months. Today, he speaks a total of 6 languages fluently. He thinks in foreign languages, and he's still learning more. Now, he's currently got a Kickstarter campaign for a new app, and it's become the most successful app in campaign history for Kickstarter. His book is called Fluent Forever, How to Learn Any Language Fast and Never Forget It. Our guest is Gabriel Weiner. Gabe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we have a tradition on the LeadX Show. We always ask our guests the same first question, and we're hoping that you're going to tell us a story about a time when you failed at something and what you learned from it, because I like to learn from other people's failures.
I have a good one for this. The first draft of my book, I was writing my book in 2012, I believe, and I turned in a first draft and I heard nothing back from my editor and from my agent for for about a month and a half. And I figured, okay, well, I guess no news is maybe good news. And so I kept writing. And eventually I got back this note from my editor, 4 pages long, and basically said, if you write like this, I'm canceling your contract.
Ooh.
And it wasn't just mean. It actually wasn't particularly mean. It was just brutally honest. He was like, you're doing everything wrong. And by everything wrong, I mean these following 3 pages of problems.
Wow.
And just went line by line and was like, this is terrible. This is terrible. This is terrible. Here's why it's terrible. And he said, you know, we should probably talk on the phone.
Yeah.
So we talked on the phone and he gave me looking back at it now, I was like, those chapters were terrible. And they were terrible because I basically, the start of my method of how to learn languages is learning pronunciation. And I didn't have a good approach for the average person for that. And so I just kind of launched into this like really off description of like the epiglottal fricative is made using the epiglottis and like just this just super wonky, like terrible thing. And he was like, where is the narrative here? Like, where is anything that anyone would actually want to read? Like, please never write this again. And he showed me this book that he had edited called Thank You for Arguing by Jay Hendricks about like the art of argumentation that apparently had started, like the very first draft was much like mine. It was like mimesis is the Greek word for mimicking your argument, like this kind of thing. And it ended up being this super charming book about argument, but it was like basically about how this guy's kids always win arguments against him.
Huh.
And it became like from the very first page, you're like, oh, here is my new super nerdy friend.
Right.
Like this guy totally is like just this argumentation nerd and he loves it. And he's just telling me stories about his life. And like in the sidebar, like you'd have this discussion about his kid, like just destroying him in an argument. And then you have a little sidebar thing that said like mimesis is the technique my kid just used.
Yeah.
It's the Greek thing. And like the book is it has a voice. It has like, this is a person who is speaking to you and you like him. It's just someone being honest.
So, well, but there's so many possible lessons from this story, Gabe. Is it the lesson of having a good editor? The lesson of how to write an accessible book? Like, what was your takeaway?
I mean, I panicked. But the other thing I did was I learned how to write. I mean, I took that lesson in terms of who, like, how to write like, what the point is of a book of this type, which is, like, you just put yourself out there and you become a friend to the reader. And then I guess the other half was that I needed to learn how to do English style. And since everything I did up to that point was based on these sort of flashcard techniques, I got a book on English style called Style Lessons on Clarity and Grace that has like A sentences and B sentences. A was good, B was bad, same information in both. And I memorized the whole book using flashcards. And by the end of it, I could write really good English.
Give us the name of that book, because I think myself and a bunch of others are going to go out and get it.
Oh, it's a phenomenal book. Style Lessons on Clarity and Grace.
Now, Gabe, you had no idea of this before you told that story, but yesterday I turned in my first draft manuscript to my editor.
Good luck.
Yeah. And it's funny. So it was due September 1st. And so I was a month late, which wasn't great. And he had been bugging me the week before, like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, where's your manuscript? I'm like, okay, I'll give it to you on Monday. It's like, I send it off to Monday and I haven't heard anything. And I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure he's getting to it. But you triggered some emotion in me with your stories. I'm like thinking like, you know what? What if it's not fine and I'm going to hear from him in a month?
Well, I mean, editors do have a vested interest in this thing eventually being good as opposed to simply canceling a contract. So there's
right.
that at least.
That's right. So the other question I always like to ask our guests up front is, you know, you've had a very interesting career. I mean, what advice would you give to a young professional out there who, you know, she really wants to make her way, she wants to stand out and get ahead, whether that's, you know, doing her own thing or in a larger organization? What kind of career advice would you give her?
I mean, I guess this one's kind of trite in some sense, but like persistence is a thing that it's an important thing. I guess what I mean by that is like, I remember I started becoming really passionate about this language learning stuff and I started writing about it and I had this article that had some traction with people and I thought, you know, this would be good on a really big blog. And I submitted it to lifehacker.com and nothing happened. And then I submitted it again and then nothing happened. And I think it would be really easy to kind of stop there. But I was just kind of like, no, this is good. Like, I know this is good. So I just kept going down the list of authors. And eventually I got to like number 6 and number 6 was like, oh, yeah, this is good. I'll publish it tomorrow.
Wow.
And that started this whole, I mean, I got a book publisher offer and then 2 hours after that thing got published. And it was like, it would have been really easy to stop.
You literally went through like 5 no's before you got to the yes to publish the article.
I didn't even get no's. I got no response.
Wow.
So like, yeah, I think that that's a thing that exists where it's like you can keep doing something and eventually maybe it will work. Like they're, I guess they have the little sort of thing of like, you know, crazy as you keep doing a thing that doesn't work, but like just switch the email address. It should be better.
So you mentioned, I mentioned in the, when I read your bio at the beginning of the show, you know, you've got this incredible love of languages. And when did that begin?
I think that really began in 2004. I went to a German immersion program in Middlebury, Vermont, and they're like super intense, insane programs. You sign a contract that says if I speak one word that's not German this summer, I get kicked out.
Wow.
They're nuts and they're great. And I didn't speak any German going in. And so I really didn't know anything going in. And I found by the end of that summer that I was like thinking in German and I was able to think in an entirely new way and express myself in an entirely new way. And it was just spectacularly cool. I didn't realize that I was capable of doing this thing. And then you go to a program that forces you to do it and suddenly you can do it. So I would say that that's where it really kind of began.
Did you say this happened over one summer?
Yeah, I did 7 weeks at this program. And it's sort of universal. I mean, if you do a program like this, you leave it being able to speak a language. I wouldn't call that fluency.
Right.
The nice thing about the Europeans is they have a really clear framework of like exactly what level are you in a particular language. That starts A0, A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2. And so I kind of landed at a B1 level by the end of the summer, which meant I could kind of hold conversations and be comfortable in this thing. And then I went back the following summer, did 7 more weeks. And by the end, I was sort of C1, which is like a solid fluency.
Wow.
But those immersion programs are phenomenal.
And so even after the first round, while you said you weren't quite fluent, I mean, it's way beyond like tourist German, for example.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it's you're able to think like you're dreaming in German, honestly, by the end of the second or third week. They're stupid dreams. You're like, this is blue. That is blue. Like, but still, you're dreaming in your target language. Like, that's cool.
That is very cool. That is very cool.
Yeah.
Now, in your failure story, you actually, you know, we're talking about your book, Fluent Forever. So tell us more about it, because obviously you and your editor got it into great shape. Tell us about the final product.
The final product is actually, I'm pretty happy with it. Like it's a story. I mean, it's sort of a story of memory in some sense. It's how the human brain takes in information. And that ends up being kind of the main barrier when people want to learn languages, ends up being memory as opposed to anything else. Some people think like, oh no, it's grammar, it's pronunciation. And like all of those things are almost beside the point. Like the main issue is, can you retain the things that you looked at today in a month? Mm. And if you can, then you're going to succeed at this thing. And if you can't, then you won't. And there's a lot of things that really people run into where they try to memorize translations and your brain is actively trying to forget translations. It has really good structures for getting rid of that kind of information, because as far as your brain's concerned, translations are garbage. They're just stuff that you're reading. And basically, as you go through and you look at how we store information, you start realizing like why a lot of standard approaches to language learning fight that. And so if you stop fighting that and you really go and grapple with that problem, you find a method that really builds on itself and allows you to improve every day to the point where you're actually reaching fluency in a short amount of time.
So tell our listeners, I mean, it's not the kind of book where it's like, learn German in 4 weeks with this, you know, with this book. It's not about one language.
No.
But reading Fluent Forever will help you to learn any language faster, better.
Yes. I mean, it's basically understanding what the problem is in front of you and then giving some suggestions about, okay, well, here's the problem. Now you get why it's a problem. And so here's a way that you can grapple with that. Here's a way that you can actually get around this problem and fix it based upon what we know about the human brain. And also based upon my experiences. I mean, Fluent Forever was the chance to write the book was a 2-year opportunity for me to research why my methods worked. I found my methods out of trial and error. I mean, I was just sort of trying to find something that would get me through these languages, and I found something that worked way better than I had expected, started playing with it and teaching people about it and teaching people how to use it. And I found this thing that was really quite polished and worked quite well and didn't know how it worked. And then the book's the opportunity for me to really research, like, what's going on here? Why is this working so well? And then tell that story.
So now you start, as you mentioned, the article. The article led to the book, and the book is actually led now. You're working on the Fluent Forever app, and you have a Kickstarter campaign, which is already, it's not done yet, it's already become the most successful app campaign in the history of Kickstarter, right?
Yes, that is true. Yeah.
So what you've raised, I think it's about $400,000 as of this interview. Mm-hmm. What's your goal?
Personally, I'm aiming at trying to get to around $850,000. That's about when we have enough money to finance creating resources for every single language. And what I mean, like, you can't actually make resources for every single language. What I'm aiming for is a structure where you can really easily create your own resources with the help of a tutor and then share those resources with everyone else studying that same language. Which means that in short order, once you even have like three or four people who are really kind of going into this and learning a language, suddenly you have four people worth of resources that would be enough, like that you can kind of go into and say and vote them up and vote them down and have a means of learning a language even without a tutor.
So this sounds incredible. So if with the basic of the app, and will you launch it with the, hey, here's how to learn Spanish, and it's got these other features that would let you, you know, put in your own language learning, or how does that work?
We have languages that we're sort of supporting completely. And so that would be, I think we're supporting around 10 languages by if we start knocking through all of our stretch goals. So that's Spanish, Italian, French, sort of the romance set, assuming we get to our next stretch goal coming pretty soon. That's going to be Portuguese too in that set, you know, Dutch, German, Russian, Hebrew, Arabic, Korean, Mandarin, Japanese. And so for those languages, we're providing a full suite of everything. Like there's tools for learning pronunciation that I've been working on for the last 3.5 years and work phenomenally well. So there's sort of the start of the app. And then there's the 625 words with 3 sentences associated with each one of those words. And so it's kind of walking you through this language on a kind of vocabulary level of saying, you know, here's a word you should learn first, but here's a sentence you should learn it in. And here's how to take in all of the grammar that's in that sentence and get that into your head in a permanent sort of manner or in a long-term sort of manner. And so as you get through this vocabulary list, by the end of it, you are able to kind of to think in this language, not just kind of think, to actually think in this language and form thoughts. And really by the end of this sort of 625 word list, you have a vocabulary of around probably around 2,000 words of sort of the most viable, useful words of how to put stories together. And so you're already at a point where you're speaking at an intermediate level, thinking at an intermediate level. And at that point, you can start branching off and saying, well, I want to go back into those words and learn more sentences, or I want to learn my own sentences and go off path. And to that end, everyone who's using this app is, if they're adding their own sentences, those sentences become sort of community property that we are going to have professionally proofread and then professionally recorded so that you can start having this giant database of sentences to choose from and stick into your head.
Wow. Now, I think, you know, I'm 50 years old, and I think I remember growing up in, you know, sort of the popular language things was like Berlitz, and it was probably cassette tapes or something when I first encountered them.
Sure,
and
then, sure.
You know, CDs and things. Now, these days, I think what I hear about most often is probably the app Duolingo.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you think of Duolingo, and if someone had to contrast what they're doing versus what the Fluent Forever app is going to do, you know, how would you describe that?
Duolingo is doing some things really, really well, which is to make the language learning process kind of a fun game. Mm-hmm. So their gamification stuff has been really solid. One of the things, though, is that their product is translation. The thing that they're actually, like, the reason they're able to do this for free is because they're providing translation services by their users. Mm-hmm. They're selling translation to businesses. And so one of the things that the users are always doing is translating, which is really hard and is intrinsically limited, because the thing that you're trying to do when you're actually trying to learn to think in a language and learn to speak it and reach fluency is you're trying to not translate.
Right.
You're trying to think about words in the context of that language. You want, when you see like a word like Hungarian's word for camera, fényképezőgép, like it's totally forgettable. Because it sounds nuts. Once you get past that sound part and it becomes sort of familiar sounding, still, if you're learning the translation for that word, then like with the word camera, I can think of a million different pictures of cameras and photos that I've taken in my life. Like cameras associated with all kinds of stuff. Words like shutter and lens and photographer and photograph and to take a picture. All that stuff is associated with my word for camera. What do you have for fényképezőgép? Like, nothing.
Right.
Like, do you have, like, is that word associated with any images at all? Like, no, it's associated with the English word, the sound of the word camera. You know, is it associated with the words for shutter? No. Like, do you know the word finicate-based, like photographer? Like, no, you haven't learned that one yet. Like, all of those associations are missing from your new word in that language. And unless you consciously aim at building those, which means getting away from translations, then there's a wall in front of you. You can't get past that until you skip that.
And Gabe, I just want to, you know, highlight that for our listeners. You know, when I was doing a little bit of research before this interview, that's what struck me, because, you know, it's been a lot of years. And so I just had, you know, high school German is probably the last thing I would remember, or maybe some travel French. But it was always a translation. It would be, here is the word apple, and then here's the foreign language version of it, you know, whatever language you were studying. And so I could see, even back, you know, 30 years ago when I won an award for high school German, it just meant like I was switching. I could translate very quickly in my head. I certainly wasn't thinking in German or thinking, you know, that language. I was just switching the words really fast, or knew a few phrases that I could swap out for similar English phrases. And your approach is not like that at all. I mean, you very quickly get people thinking in the language because you're bypassing that word for word memorization approach.
Word for word memorization is really hard. I mean, there's a reason why translators, like if you talk about simultaneous translators, they're paid around $250 to $300 an hour. And it's like, for really good reason. That's one of the hardest jobs in the world. And then you're trying to, like, you have language classes where in some sense you're trying to like train people to be simultaneous translators. And people are like, oh, this is hard. Maybe this isn't for me. And it's because they're going about it in the wrong direction. Like simultaneous translators, they learn how to think in a language. And then on top of that skill, they learn translation skills.
Yeah.
And somehow the idea of just sort of skipping the like learning to think in a language and going straight to translation, like that's not an efficient way to get this job done.
So, Gabe, let me ask you this. Clearly, anyone who's traveling around the world for fun, or they're traveling around the world for business, which increasingly people are doing, you know, it's helpful to speak another language. What are some of the other benefits people would get from learning another language, even if they don't really, they're not working, you know, in that language?
I mean, personally, I learn languages because I enjoy it, like literally the process. I don't even enjoy speaking them that much. Like, I people are like, hey, how's your French doing? How's your Italian doing? Like, I'm letting them atrophy. Like, I can get them back, but I mostly enjoy the process of getting there. And so there's the joy of that process, which I think people can discover if they really go into it. It's like, oh, I can train my brain to think in a completely new way. Like, that's really cool. But aside from that, like, language learning has been documented to basically make you smarter. It's a kind of learned intelligence. You will remember things better if you know more languages. You can push off with one more language. You push off Alzheimer's by an average of 4 years.
Wow.
Like, it's the kind of strength training for your brain that almost nothing else that I'm aware of can provide. And like those Alzheimer's benefits, for instance, like those scale up the more languages you learn. Like that's not just a like one time thing. And so you like it's documented that people who speak multiple languages are more creative. They can think faster. They do better at math. They do better in their native language. Like, you get all this stuff by learning one other language, and you get more by learning more. So like that kind of stuff, the idea of being able to like actually improve your own brain is a rare thing. I'm not aware of other ways to do it. So like that's kind of in there as a really nice perk.
Love that. So, Gabe, I'm going to have you share with everyone how they can go and check out your Kickstarter campaign and book and things. But until the app is out, I mean, is there anything that we could be doing? I always like to challenge the LeadX listeners, like, let's get a little bit better every single day. So is there just some little starter thing that we can do to begin to explore speaking or even thinking in a foreign language, or getting ready to choose a language? Like, how do we get started on this journey?
I mean, well, the thing you were just saying in terms of choosing a language, like that's an important consideration that sometimes isn't obvious. I mean, sometimes people are like, I don't know. I just kind of like the idea of learning another language, but whatever, I don't know which one. And so starting that thought process is certainly an important one. If you've chosen a language and you find something that you really love, then starting to learn pronunciation in that language is going to be the first step no matter what. And so you can start that right now. Like, my last 3.5 years have been about developing resources for people who want to learn pronunciation. And like, those exist now. And so that's something that's absolutely doable. And then kind of learning what's ahead of you, I think, is kind of the next step there. Like, I would suggest my book, but there's other options. But like kind of understanding what it is that you're trying to accomplish when you actually start going about learning this language thing, like in terms of what's going on in your brain and what's going on in front of you in terms of this particular language you want to learn. Like, what does the grammar look like? These sorts of questions. That stuff you can do way in advance of this app certainly existing.
Okay, so this is perfect because my son, who just started eighth grade, just started Spanish. And I never studied Spanish. And so he literally, this is as of last week, Gabe, you're not gonna believe, he comes home, he says, hey, can you help me study for my Spanish quiz tomorrow? So he's handing me, and of course it's, you know, you'd be horrified, but it's like the traditional flashcards pretty much.
Yes.
But of course, I want to be a supportive dad, but I'm looking at him like, are the L's like R's or the R's like L's? Like, I have no idea how to say these words to you. So this year, I will start with Spanish. So until your app comes out, what are some of your resources that maybe I could go find now to get started?
Absolutely. I mean, for the last 3.5 years, people have been using this stuff. The only thing that the app does is make things a little faster. But like this stuff all exists and is usable. I generally recommend that people start with my book just so they can get an overview of what they're trying to do here.
Right.
And then on my website, I have pronunciation training apps. They're designed to fit into someone else's flashcard application that's been around since 2006 called Anki. Installing it is a little clunky, but it's doable, and you install it and it works. And in about 2 weeks, you can hear all the sounds of Spanish and you know the spelling rules, and you should be just fine with your son's flashcards. Past that, actually, there's sort of lists of words that you can start going into and building actual Spanish vocabulary and grammar and things like that if you decide you have enough time to do that before the apps come out.
Okay. And you're being so nice and educational, non-promotional, but give us your website. What's the address?
Sure, of course. Sorry. The website address is Fluent, F-L-U-E-N-T, dash or hyphen, whatever, dash forever, F-O-R-E-V-E-R.com.
Wonderful. And we're going to make sure there's a link to that in the show notes. And of course, everybody can find your book, Forever Fluent, at Amazon or their favorite bookstore. And I want to get back to the Kickstarter before we leave, because I think there's going to be people out there who are going to be like, Kevin, but I want to know how he got the $400,000 on Kickstarter. You got any tricks to promoting a great Kickstarter campaign?
I mean, tricks in general are about having email addresses of people who are really interested in your thing. I mean, my first Kickstarter raised around $100,000, and I started with a mailing list of around 500 people who were super interested. And Kickstarter is an audience multiplier, and so I ended up with 1,800 people. Hmm. This Kickstarter, my mailing lists were around 50,000 people.
Wow.
And so it's just a whole different order of thing. It's why this thing jumped so quickly. And like, that's kind of an essential part of a Kickstarter, is you need an audience before you start. You can't multiply nothing. And so that's there. In my particular case, I think this thing has gotten so much traction because it's gotten users. Like, I it's not like I'm just out there saying, hey guys, I hope you like this thing, I made it. But it's, hey guys, I made this thing, and here are years worth of users. Here are, you know, hundreds of users. Here are people on videos saying, I learned these three languages over the past 3 years using these techniques. That kind of social proof is something that is really, really powerful and lacking in the language learning market. And so when you can come out there and say, I have something new, and it's not just new and I say it's good, but it's new and these people, this whole community has used it, that's super powerful.
I love that. Gabe, I was just doing another podcast interview this morning with Dori Clark, who's got a book coming out about marketing. And she hit on this very point. She said, for anybody who's just getting, started, she says, go out and get that first customer, a couple, and it's not about the money. She says, you need the social proof. You need these success stories, these transformation stories. So other people realize it's not just you saying it. There's these other people that are saying it really does work. So that's great validation on that.
Yeah.
So LeadX family, if you didn't fully get it, you know, our challenge of the day, I invite you to follow along with me. I mean, pick a language and then go over to fluent-forever.com and check out the resources there. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it so I can help my son study. But I also really like that benefit about delaying Alzheimer's. So that was good, too.
That's a handy one.
Yeah, it's a handy one. That's right. Gabe, best of luck on this journey, and thanks for coming on to the LeadX show.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Friends, before we go, remember, at LeadX, we're on a mission to give free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit leadx.org. leadx.org, that is, to check out our course of the day, or visit leadx.org/Branson to download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership. And please take one quick minute, go to leadx.org/subscribe to subscribe and leave a rating for this podcast, The LeadX Leadership Show, leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, remember, you have incredible influence on those around you, your family, your team at work, your community. We all need you to lead mindfully. How will you lead today?